It is also, however, a culture with a great taste for luxury. We find finely worked vessels made of alabastron and other stones. We find extraordinarily fine gold work, often showing not just geometric designs beaten out of the gold, repoussé, but also designs that show scenes of hunters and farmers taming wild bulls and scenes of this sort. We have sumptuous drinking vessels, and collectively all this evidence points to a wealthy Mycenaean world and one with a great taste for luxury. Now, in the 120 years or so since Schliemann's excavations at Mycenae, the rest of the excavations there have added to our knowledge of the Mycenaeans in two very important respects. The first is that we know that at the end of its history, in the 13th century in particular, Mycenae was functioning very much like a Minoan palace. Yes, it had these monumental walls, but we've found outside, or sometimes within the bastion, but sometimes outside as well, signs of craftsmen and workers living below the palace. The men and women who worked with precious metals, the men and women who made perfume, living in a kind of proto-town, as it were. So it looks as if, in some ways, Mycenae was reflecting the influence of the Minoan world. And the other thing that we know quite clearly from this century's excavations is that stylistically, the Mycenaean world was borrowing extremely heavily from Minoan Crete. That is to say, Minoan vessels, either made in Crete and exported to Greece, or vessels made in Mycenae by Minoan craftsmen, on loan perhaps, or itinerant craftsmen, who knows, these are turning up in a Mycenaean setting. So that Mycenaean culture, though a native Greek culture, indigenous if you will, is strongly affected by its contact with the world of Crete. It is borrowing its motifs. It is modelling itself on them. And we are familiar in the modern world with this sort of cultural movement. If you think, for example, of the way that Japan has become increasingly westernised in the period since the Second World War, you see this kind of cultural influence turning up in the way people dress, in the kind of vessels they use, and so forth. But this relationship between the Minoan world, a brilliant Bronze Age culture, and the Mycenaean world, another brilliant Bronze Age culture, creates a debate that dominated prehistory and archaeology, the archaeology of the prehistoric period, throughout the early part of this century. The positions are relatively clear. Sir Arthur Evans, the founder, the creator, if you will, the rediscoverer of Knossos, maintained that the line of transmission was very simple. Crete was the mother culture. The Cretans colonised the mainland, so that the culture of the mainland, though it has local and indigenous elements, is essentially an offshoot of Cretan culture, Cretan colonists. Others, particularly Alan Wace, the English excavator in the first part of the century, argued that, in fact, Mycenaean Greece had been a separate culture, an indigenous culture, which had come under Cretan influence, not colonised by the Cretans, but Cretan influence by its exposure to Cretan artwork and Cretan style, particularly as a result of trading contacts out in the islands and in the Aegean. Now, this debate was resolved triumphantly in the early 1950s, and the event which resolved this debate was, in my humble opinion, the most significant event in Greek archaeology this century. And it was not an excavation. It was the translation of Linear B by the English architect Michael Ventris, who demonstrated conclusively that Linear B is Greek. Now, let me explain the significance of this and relate it to the question of the two cultures. We have seen that on Crete, we have a palatial culture going back to about 1900. The palaces there underwent a period of destruction around 1700, but they were rebuilt very shortly afterwards. And most of the Minoan palaces went through a second period then of prosperity that lasted from about 1700 down to about 1450.